Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. A little after 4:30 this afternoon, it's Tulane Tuesday. We'll have on with us the head football coach of the Tulane Green Wave, John Summerall. Coach Summerall will talk about the win over East Carolina. It was a messy win, but it was a win, and that's the important thing. And now you're playing Army, but at least you don't have to look across the field and see that guy, Bryson Daly, playing quarterback for Army. Man, he was something for Army. So we'll get Coach Summerall come on with us to break down Army and also a look back at last Thursday's game against East Carolina. In the 5 o'clock hour, we'll have on with us Mark Schlereff from NFL on Fox. Mark's with us each and every week. He's our Odyssey insider, expert on the NFL. We'll get him to talk about the Saints, Bears, and certainly all across the National Football League in an interesting week. And last night, Charlie, man, two really good games. We'll start off with the Bears first. This was the most Detroit Lions-type game that we've seen from the Bears. And why I say that is Ben Johnson, who ran that offense the last couple years for Dan Campbell in Detroit, they really leaned on the running game last night. And you saw it with DeAndre Swift, 14 carries, 108 yards. He averaged 7.7 yards a pop. And they ran the football 27 times against the Commanders for 145 yards. Now, they got some weapons on the outside now. When you look at – and he also caught two passes for 67 yards and a touchdown, but they got some excellent wide receivers, if it's Luther Burden, if it's DJ Moore, Roma Dunsey, and we kind of went through it already with the two tight ends and Cole Kmet and also Colston Loveland. But last night, they really leaned on the running game with DeAndre Swift, and just kind of a freak thing late in the game. Weather conditions weren't great, but a blotch handoff from Jaden Daniels gave Chicago sort of a short field opportunity to win it. And all I know is, man, Jake Moody, who had been through so many difficult moments in San Francisco as a place kicker, and had one blocked a few minutes earlier in that game, comes in, hits the game winner to beat the Commanders 25-24. Also was impressed with Caleb Williams. I thought he was efficient in this game, 17 of 29, 252 yards, one touchdown, no interceptions. Again, I think that's the big change in this offense. You see a guy understanding he doesn't have to make a big play every time he touches the football or when he's out on the field, playing and using the offensive weapons he has very well. They really leaned on the running game last night because of field conditions, and they got it done. And, boy, you look at that schedule, they might have a role here. But, again, this was an impressive win on the road for the Bears last night, Charlie.
And to your point about DeAndre Swift, Mike, it really hasn't been there this year. That's been one of the biggest criticisms of the Bears' offense, is that their rushing attack really hasn't gotten going. Mike, last night you talked about all the new faces on their offensive line. But if you're just talking about Swift, he really wasn't getting it done. I mean, he had three different games where he was below 3.1 yards per carry. He's getting the touches. I mean, 17 carries, 12, 13, 14, 14. But it was in that game against Washington where he finally made the most and had that breakout performance. 14 rushing attempts, 108 yards, 7.7 yards per carry, also utilized in the passing game. And that's what, as you mentioned, Ben Johnson really wants to do. So when we're going to be previewing the Saints' test against the Bears, now you really have to kind of throw DeAndre Swift into the mix because he had kind of that breakout performance. I know he's a veteran guy. He's been around the league a little bit. But now you have to kind of key in on him as well because that rushing attack really is a young quarterback's best friend. But it does also help that they have all the weapons on the outside that they do too.
Man, do they. And you got a new interior, and that always takes a little while. You talk about a veteran center. They went out, got Atlanta's center, and then get Joe Tunney from Kansas City and Jonah Jackson from the Rams. So all that was new when you got your two starting guards in your center, a couple young tackles. But, man, they were able to kind of hammer it through when they needed to last night. When they needed to run the ball and had to run it, they were able to get it done last night. And Swift was certainly a big part of it. But you see now the matchup situations here of how the Saints will be able to kind of try to slow down, which is potentially a really explosive offensive team. And they didn't have a running game. And then now all of a sudden last night, it looks as though they pieced it together against the Commanders. And then you saw the flip side of it with Atlanta and Buffalo. We've talked about this even before the Saints played Buffalo. They lousy on defense. I mean, they bad. It can't stop anybody when it comes down to running the football. The Saints were able to get a running game against them when they played them. But every team's run the ball against them. Last night, Atlanta, in a 24-14 win over Buffalo, they ran the ball 32 times for 210 yards total. They averaged over 6.5 yards a rush. The guy that, you know, and man, I remember we were doing the previews when he came out for the draft, Bijan Robinson. Everybody, oh, you shouldn't take a running back in the top 10 picks. That's not anybody there that can change the game. Look what Bijan Robinson did last night. 19 carries, 170 yards, scored a rushing touchdown. Then he caught 6 passes for 68 yards. Man, Bijan was absolutely fantastic in front of a, you know, kind of a nationwide viewing audience to watch just how good of a runner and a receiver he is. And then also Drake London, 10 catches, 158 yards for the wide receiver. Michael Penix leaned on both of them. I thought the Falcons defense, for the most part, did a really good job slowing down that Bills offense. Atlanta now, after an embarrassing performance against Carolina, has sort of pieced it together a little bit. Last night, though, was a huge win for them at home, but it was the coming out party for the man who really carried the rock big time at University of Texas, Bijan Robinson.
Yeah, and it's those flashy weapons that the Falcons feature, Mike. They use these top picks on Bijan and Drake London, and both of these guys are just unbelievable in that performance against the Bills defense that has tons of question marks. What shocked me, though, Mike, is that if you're looking at the Bills and their start to the season, they're 4-0, and then they drop that primetime game to the Patriots. Everyone's just like, okay, well, you know, it's a divisional game that can happen. Then you go on the road to face Atlanta, and I get that Atlanta was coming off the bye week, but the fact that the Bills' offense looked as flat as they did last night, they never lose a turnover battle. I remember when we were previewing the Bills' matchup against the Saints, they always take care of the ball. That's like their number one thing. 2 interceptions for Josh Allen last night. And then also, they're not able to take away the ball from Michael Penix and the Falcons' offense, and all of a sudden you get a 10-point loss. And really, like, you can talk about the Bills' defense, and it wasn't good. I mean, Bijan torched them, Drake London torched them. But I was disappointed in what I saw from the Bills' offense. This is a Falcons defense that's still very young at different positions, Mike, and that's why they're going to be kind of on the roller coaster, right, where you see this Falcons team lose 30-0 to the Panthers just a few weeks ago, and then they beat the Bills at home. It's going to be the ups and the downs of a young team, and you saw the ups with Atlanta last night.
Yeah, they looked impressive on offense. Now, Penix, I thought he was before, man. He's always good for a couple of lollipop throws every game. And he had a couple of them out there. The Bills didn't come up with it, but he threw the ball right to him at least twice. And it might have been a third time. I'd have to go back and look. But at least twice, he threw the ball right to the defender. He didn't come up with it. That is part of Penix's sort of DNA as a quarterback. He's going to make some great plays. He's going to make some plays out of the pocket. He's got a rocket for an arm. And he can put the ball in a tight window. But he always has a couple of three passes that you say, man, what are you trying to do? And late in the game, he did that. He tried to force one and right to the defender for Buffalo. He just couldn't come up with the interception. But, man, when they needed to, man, Bijan, he was big time. And if you got a question about, you know, picking a back and with that type talent with a top 10 pick, you don't know what you're talking about. If you say Bijan Robinson's not worth it, he really is the straw that turns the drink for Atlanta.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because of what he can do as a runner and also as a receiver.
And as you were kind of talking about with Michael Penix, Mike, I think the biggest kind of question mark for him early on in his career has been the accuracy issues at times for him. But 20 of 32, it was a good performance. It was almost similar with Caleb Williams in his rookie year where, you know, yes, the sacks were a major, major question mark for him and the amount of times that he was just holding onto the ball too long, trying to, you know, create the splash plays and explosive plays that he was able to do in college, but you can't really get away with that in the NFL. I think this year the biggest jump for both of these guys has become, you know, the better accuracy. Like it's a your second season, you're kind of you put in the work in the offseason, and you can definitely tell that both these guys, Caleb Williams and Michael Penix, have been in the lab trying to become more accurate as passers.
Man, Mike, he's got some talent. I just wish I could kind of break that habit of them lollipop throws up there that look to be almost easy interceptions. A couple years on this, Charlie, the Dodgers won late last night, 2-1 over the Brewers.
Boom.
They play again tonight and in Seattle. Man, 10-3 over the Blue Jays. Now with a 2-0 lead, now they go back to Seattle to play. And, man, for the Dodgers who had so many pitching woes, to see what happened late last night, Charlie, when they needed some strikeouts and some outs, they were able to get it, and then they play another game tonight against Milwaukee.
And that's why spending money works in baseball, because Blake Snell was unbelievable in game one for the Dodgers. But, I mean, if you're Bryce Turner, take the hit, man. Take the hit by pitch. You have the bases loaded in that situation. You can tie the game if you just wear, you know, whatever. It was like an 80-mile-per-hour curveball on the knee. And he just ducks out of it, and then all of a sudden he strikes out, game over. It's, man, Mike, that was frustrating because, you know, you were hoping that the Brewers could pull off some type of miracle to win game one at home, and they fall just short. So the Dodgers take the early 1-0 lead. And as you mentioned, I got to cup my ears because this is shaping up to be a nightmare World Series for your boy with the Mariners taking two games in Toronto and then the Dodgers taking game one in Milwaukee. These are the... Oh, man, I'm not a fan of the Mariners. I'm not a fan of the Dodgers. I've made that clear as being an Astros fan. I would love to see, you know, Blue Jays and Brewers, but both of those squads got some work to do, Mike D.
And the strikeout pitch, look how high that was. He was chasing that
terrible
one. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 WWL right after this break.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike DeTelli along with Charlie Long. Let's go to our telephone lines. We got Wayne in Mississippi. Wayne, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, Mike, how you guys doing this evening?
Doing great, Wayne. How are you, bud?
I'm good. Hey, Mike, I got a question for you. I was just wondering if you got a reading on our new coach. I know he's brand new, you know, as a head coach, but he's been in the league, obviously offensive coordinator for the Eagles, but how would you rate his intensity? And, you know, when you see him on the sideline, does he have the fire and you know, to kind of want to motivate the guys to maybe, you know, get that fire burning in him? How are you guys rating that, or have you really looked at that so far this year?
Wayne, he is who he is. You can't – Bobby has that comment. Can't fake the funk. Okay, if you're not a fire and brimstone guy – and you try to be that way, the players see right through that you're a phony. They see it right through you. That's not who Kellen Moore is. He got a lot of fire in him, but it's not an outwardly fire. He's not going to be like Sean Payton, okay, and be demonstrative on the sidelines. That's just who he is personality-wise. And you can't change that just because you went from a coordinator to be a head coach, because that's not your real personality. Does he have a lot of fire? Yes, he does. You know, you look at his college career and what he was able to accomplish at Boise State at quarterback. He was a journeyman quarterback in the NFL, but how he made that ascent up to be a head coach, he's got a lot of fire in him, but it's not that outward fire that you see from some coaches. But if you try to fake that, Wayne, they spot it. Man, what are you trying to do? You're not like that in your real personality. And so they won't respond to that. They respond to who you are as a personality. It's just like going to work. You know, the worst people that you're going to work for is you don't know who you're going to get from day to day. One day they ride in the mountaintop, and the next day they're in the valley. The one thing with Kellen Moore, that personality stays the same. I can deal with that if I'm an employee or if I'm a player. I know what I'm going to get from him. But, yeah, he got plenty fire. He just isn't outward about it like you see with some coaches. But if you try to be something different, man, the players, I know you ain't like that. Who are you trying to fool? So it's just part of his demeanor that we're going to have to get used to. That's how he handles things, you know, because you can almost hear kind of, you know, all the wheels clicking in his head as he's trying to figure it out, but he's not going to be outward about it. That's not a negative, to be honest with you. He's not trying to be somebody he isn't at this stage. But it's a really great question, Wayne. Thanks so much for the call. We come back. It's our Tulane Tuesday segment. We'll have on with us the head football coach of the Tulane Green Wave, John Summerall, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, it's Tulane Tuesday in our Tulane Tuesday segment with Tulane football head coach John Summerall is brought to you by Fleet Supply Warehouse, providing wholesale distribution with next-day delivery throughout South Louisiana. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
I appreciate y'all having me on. Hope all is well.
Coach, I got a caller call in about demeanor of coaches, and but Kellen Moore doesn't show a lot of emotion on the sidelines. I've been around kind of both sides. I've been around guys that, man, they wear those emotions on the sleeve, but that's who their personality is. And yet you have others, you know, it's not quite there. They have the fire burning, but they can control their emotions. I know one thing, you wasn't a happy camper at the end of that East Carolina game, and it showed through as I was watching on television. But you've been through coaches like that. Just because your emotions are not, maybe say, heavy on your players and stuff like that, that doesn't mean you don't have a lot of fire in the belly to coach.
No, everybody's got a different personality, you know, and I think the important thing is you have to be authentic and genuine to who you are. I have a great relationship and friendship with Kellen, and I have a ton of respect for him as a coach and what he's about. He's really detailed and thorough, and his passion just maybe presents different than maybe mine does, but he's passionate, you know, and I love our guys. I want to see them be the best they can be. When I'm, you know, displeased, people usually can sense it. And my displeasure with things is just because I want our guys to maximize their opportunities and become the best they can be. And so I have no problem. You know, my wife would tell you my greatest strength is my greatest weakness. I'm brutally honest. And if you want the truth, hang around me. If you don't want the truth, get away from me, because I'm going to tell you what I think is the truth. And I'm always going to call it like I see with our guys. I think too many times this world we live in, we coddle players and people make excuses or enable or entitle them. And I'm like, man, a great player wants to get coached. And if you don't want to get coached, then you're probably not a great player.
Yeah, no question about that. Coach, I think you were upset too. Had opportunities to put this game away against East Carolina a few times, and it just wasn't there. And the turnovers and, you know, different things happened. And that's the most frustrating part of a game, that you feel as though you have in hand, and it almost sort of slipped away at the end a little bit.
Yeah, you know, when you we were in the middle of the second quarter, we had 200-something yards of offense, and the opponent had about 50. We had four or five red zone trips, and we couldn't score touchdowns. We kicked a field on the first one. We faked a field on the second one, didn't get it. You know, we kicked three more field goals in the first half. We go into halftime up 12-0. We've outgained them by over 200 yards. And then later in the game, we fumble in the fourth quarter on the goal line at the one-yard line, two-yard line on a mesh. And, you know, we talk a lot around here about the wave can't beat the wave. We tried to beat ourselves at times on Thursday night. And, you know, I tell our team all the time, you can't beat anybody until you don't beat yourself. And so most football games are lost, not won, you know. And our guys, I'll give them a credit on this. You know, we got up 12-0, played about as bad as we could in the third quarter, and you look up and it's 16-12. And some teams that aren't mentally tough, the wheels would have come off, and it would have avalanched. Our guys, man, they were train stoppers on Thursday night. The train was going down the tracks. They didn't like the direction it was going. They stood in front of the train and said, no, you got to turn around. And we're going to go this way. And so I appreciate the mental fortitude and the toughness our guys displayed and the grit to respond in maybe not an ideal situation when we had kind of squandered an opportunity to put the game out of reach, let the other team back in it. They got the lead. Momentum was against us. And, man, our guys really showed a lot of resiliency by how they responded.
The fast tempo offense of East Carolina seemingly gave some issues, especially in the second half. And you don't have to worry about that this week with Army because you know what you're going to get from them.
Yeah,
but
different deal, yeah.
Man, you talk about totally different. I was talking to Pete Jenkins about 2:30 this afternoon, and he was like, man, Mike, you just don't see what Army runs often in when you're going up against a team in college football. And you better be prepared for it because it's not something you practice against a lot or you see a lot on film.
Yeah, it's different. I think the hardest thing is just the vision lines for the second and third level players and understanding the picture, the presentation's different because nowadays you see so much shotgun football, right? And so it's different, it's unique. And then the biggest challenge, honestly, is getting your scout team to be able to present what looks like that type of offense. And that's a real hurdle. It's just making sure that you're presenting a look that's going to be similar to what you're actually going to see on game day. And so that's a challenge for sure. Our guys, our coaching staff's doing a good job. We've played them every year the last 3 years. Obviously, last year in the conference title game, they beat the stew out of us. And then the previous 2 years at Troy, we played them, and we stuck out a win 10-9 one year, and then we played a lot better the other year and won more decisively. But it's a challenge for sure when you don't see it very often.
At least you don't have to go up against that Bryson Daly guy. Whew. Man, he was goodness. A load for him.
Yeah, he was a big-time player, man. He was a freaking great football player. I got a lot of respect for that kid. I'm glad he's gone. These other two guys are playing with their good players in their own right, but that guy was a special player for sure.
My thing is, how the hell he got out of the state of Texas and he ended up at Army? One day I know Bryson will tell that story of exactly how that happened because he was a really good high school quarterback, and he somehow, some way, a lot of teams kind of passed on him. Man, he's a game changer. When I looked at what he did for Army over the years, he was playing quarterback for him.
Yeah, he was a special player. I mean, he's tough, gritty, blue collar, played the game with a chip on his shoulder. A lot of respect for how he played the game. I would gladly take him as a quarterback or a linebacker.
He was big enough he could have played linebacker, no question about it. I remember Coach O telling me that Sam Darnold, when he was in high school, that he was a linebacker quarterback. I said, what made the difference? He made the decision, and he was like, I saw him throw. Once I saw him throw, I knew one thing. He wasn't playing linebacker no more. He was playing quarterback at the college level. Coach, we've talked about this even before the season when you were able to get him at Tulane, but Retzloff, there's something about being a winner and finding a way to win. And it wasn't all pretty Thursday, but he found a way to win. And I think there is something in some guys, and we talked about it with Bryson and others, that you finding a way to win with your football team, even when you're not playing your best. I thought Ratzlaff, at the end of that game, he showed that moxie.
Yeah, winners win, man. I use that term a lot. Like, guys that know how to win, they just kind of find that way out of, like, it may be their A game, it may not be their A game, but they figure out how to win the game. And, you know, I really thought Jake did some really good things in the throw game. We were in a lot better rhythm and timing. We threw and caught the football a lot better. I mean, we were 27 of 37 for 362 yards, which was a really good performance by our guys. You know, we had two touchdowns throwing the football, and then the frustrating part was we had a couple touchdowns early in the game called back because of penalties, which that was disappointing. But Jake's a good leader, man, good teammate. That quarterback room's in good hands. Him and Brendan Sullivan are both the type of guys you want lead your team.
Coach, I remember when we were previewing the ECU game, we talked about their passing offense, and Caden Hauser had a season low in passing yards at 180 in the game. Just, it felt like they had different times in the game where, I guess you would call it a chunk play, a 20-yard gain here, a 20-yard gain there, and then they had the real big explosive passing play that went for almost 50. But how do you think your secondary really kind of held up overall against what was a very elite passing attack in ECU?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, the one in the third quarter was frustrating because we had alerted them, hey, they're going to take a shot here. Like, I knew a double move was coming, and then we get run by on the double move. I'm like, guys, we just told you it's coming. So that was frustrating. You know, it helped. Our pass rush was helpful. You know, sometimes your best pass coverage is a good pass rush. But our guys on the perimeter and the secondary did a nice job in coverage. I thought we timed up some things good. Played the ball in the air well, really played clean, I thought, for the most part. Had one DPI that I didn't really get mad about because it was a bang-bang play, and you don't want to overcoach that because guys will start playing with caution. And then the other one was a holding we had on, you know, kind of a physical play that their guy was being physical and ours was too, and we just got called for it. But I thought that was a big-time factor in winning the game. We knew that they had kind of lived off of some explosive plays in the past game, and we limited that for the most part other than the one in the third quarter. And that really, I think, dictated the flow of the game because they were used to, you know, getting chunk pass plays and hitting home runs, if you will.
Coach, last question for you. When you play a team like Army and you know what you're going to get from them, and every once in a while they kind of lull you to sleep because they run it and they run it and they run it, and then all of a sudden that quarterback steps back and he throws a deep one downfield and hits it on you. But up front, your front seven guys, the discipline that they have to use here, because a lot of times you can maybe fall a little bit for the eye candy. And if you get out of the gap, you give them an opportunity to make a play, either the quarterback or the running back, to get up the field, get a first down or a big play on you. And I think that's important when you play teams like this who run that style offense, that you got to be a real disciplined front. Now you play a three-man front, but whatever. That front seven has got to understand you can't sometimes overcommit, because that's when the big mistake's going to happen for you on defense.
Yeah, everybody has to do their job. You know, it's got to be disciplined and do your job. If you're on top of an eligible receiver vertical player, you got to stay on top. If you are the dive player, you got to take the dive. If you're the quarterback player, you got to take the quarterback. If you're the pitch player, you got to make sure you have good leverage on the pitch. And, you know, this type of game, the terms I use a lot with our guys is, hey, be on time to your job and be late to somebody else's. And so what I mean is, if you we practice a decent amount these kind of weeks without a football sometimes with the scout team offense, and it's, hey, everybody do their job and then run to the ball. And so you have to be able to do the ordinary part of just doing your job over and over and over and over and over. And then after your job's done, then show up and help your buddy. But these guys present a lot of problems, and they get a lot of leaky yards because guys maybe get nosy or get the wrong leverage and don't square up on the ball or don't play solid through their gap. And we got to make sure that we're physical where we're supposed to be.
Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always enjoy when you come on. Just watch they don't try to sneak that daily in. He's run out of eligibility.
All right, appreciate y'all. Roll wave.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, Coach. That was our Tulane Tuesday segment with Tulane Green Wave head football coach John Sumrall. It's brought to you by Fleet Supply Warehouse, providing wholesale distribution with next-day delivery throughout South Louisiana. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number one of Sports Talk right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Hey, we know you can't always listen to an entire show live, so Odyssey makes it easy to listen when you want, how you want. Listen to this show and WWL's Time Shifted podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this news break on the Big 870 WWL.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.